evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Monday, September 9, 2019. President Kiir greets his former vice president in Juba. And South Sudanese embrace the Kiir Machar meeting.
We the women and children are the ones affected most in every conflict, and that is not good. It is good that the vice president designate has come to Juba. It means there is peace and we are happy about it.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. South Sudan opposition leader Riek Machar met face-to-face with President Salva Kiir in the capital Juba today in hopes of reaching agreement on unresolved issues ahead of the November deadline to form a transitional government of national unity. Machar arrived from Khartoum on the same plane as a Sudanese delegation that also came to Juba to hold talks with President Salva Kiir. As Dimo Silva Aurelio reports for VOA from Juba, the Sudanese delegation was led by the deputy chairman of the Sudan Military Sovereign Council, Mohamed Hamdan Degalo.
President Kiir, who initiated the talks between the Sudanese government and the rebels, urged Sudan's political leaders to negotiate in good faith.
So that you bring back peace to your people. I'm talking like this not because my house is clean. My house is not clean. But I believe that we are one and facing the same fate. If there is no peace in Sudan, there will be no peace in South Sudan.
Mr. Kiir advised the parties to be ready to compromise so that the peace talks can progress.
If you are in opposition, you must also be flexible. You demand something and be ready also to give something. The government should do the same. That government is ready to give but must take also from the opposition. So all of you have the same responsibility, because you are fighting over the people. These subjects are the people of the country. And any one of you who is in the office today must be charged of responsibility over the people he is administering.
Kiir warned the Sudanese parties that if they fail to resolve their conflict, they could face foreign intervention. Mohamed Hamdan Dagalo says his delegation is in Juba with open hearts to engage in direct talks with the armed groups to reach a final settlement of the conflicts in Sudan. Speaking in Arabic, Dagalo said his delegation is in Juba to discuss the root causes of the continued conflict in Sudan.
The time has come to end the suffering of our people, and we should begin the journey of development and nation building. We need to have willingness and create an environment to implement what we are going to agree upon so that we are able to rebuild Sudan once again.
Abdelaziz Al-Hilu, who head the SPLM North faction based in the Nuba Mountains, praised Kiir for initiating talks between the Sudanese government and the armed opposition. Speaking in Arabic, Al-Hilu says he expects both sides to make serious compromises for the sake of genuine peace in Sudan.
There is need for more compromise needed from all the parties so that we are able to maintain the unity of the Sudan. We need to achieve a just unity, lasting peace, and a new Sudan where all are able to live together and accept one another.
And Al-Hilu said he thinks it will take all parties to accomplish that goal. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio. In Juba,
many residents of Juba say they welcome the direct talks between President Salva Kiir and Riek Machar, and some say they expect the president and his former vice president to resolve all outstanding issues that are holding up the implementation of the pre-transitional activities, including security arrangement, before the November 12th deadline. Viola Elias has more for VOA from Juba.
Speaking in Arabic, Juba resident Rebecca Kiden says women and children have shouldered the brunt of the conflict and expect the two leaders to use this opportunity to restore peace.
We, the women and children, are the ones affected most in every conflict, and that is not good. It is good that the vice president designate has come to Juba. It means there is peace and we are happy about it. As they meet, we, the citizens, expect nothing else from their meeting apart from peace, because we are tired of conflict. We don't even want to hear anything about conflict again. Let them just bring us peace.
Juba resident Emmanuel Kulang says he expects the face-to-face meeting between President Kiir and Machar to speed up implementation of the pre-transitional activities ahead of forming a unity government. Kulang says the South Sudanese people eagerly awaits the two leaders and the other signatories to the peace deal to form the transitional government of national unity in November.
As a common citizen, we would like to see into it that as soon as possible, before the deadline of the agreement comes, so they should at least make sure that they implement the key provisions of the agreement as soon as possible, so without delay. And do it. When they form the transitional government, then we will see really there are some good working relations. And then we will see even the citizens all will be happy.
Speaking in Arabic, Joyce Yabo, a resident of Juba Rock City area, is urging Kiir and Machar to think about the years of suffering that women and children have endured during South Sudan conflict.
Let them listen to our cry. People are really tired, and let them have God's mercies. Let them do the right thing so that people can be happy. Let them forgive each other. Everyone can make mistakes, but then you have to reconcile.
Resident Estella Emmanuel says she expects the two leaders to end insecurity across the country so that citizens can go about their day-to-day business without fear of violence.
Peace, of course, is the only thing we've all been expecting for a long time, and hopefully, certain stability, because nobody is comfortable moving around at any time they want. It's still been the same since 2016, since 2013. And hopefully, whatever happens in that meeting comes out with a good ending.
Machar last visited Juba in October 2018 for a celebration shortly after the government and the opposition signed the peace deal in September. Kiir and Machar have not been seen together since the two met at the Vatican in April on invitation from Pope Francis. For VOA News, I am Viola Elias in Juba.
Sudan's new cabinet was sworn in on Sunday, 5 months after the military ousted longtime President Omar al-Bashir. Can a new minister win acceptance and guidance in election in 2020? Naba Muhyiddin has reaction from Sudanese in the capital, Khartoum.
The new cabinet was set up under a power-sharing agreement between the military rulers who ousted Bashir and pro-democracy protest leaders. Political analyst Mohammed Abdurrahman thinks the new cabinet is winning wide acceptance in Sudan and that the minister should use this acceptance to build a strong representative government. The post al-Bashir era has witnessed many changes. The situation could get complicated and reach a peak that could lead to a serious turn, Abdurrahman says. Sudan could pass this dark tunnel by the new cabinet sworn in, which had the widest public acceptance since Sudan independence. The new government should work on the comprehensive reconciliation and the social development, he adds. Democracy supporters like Fifian Youssef celebrated the formation of the cabinet Monday. Youssef expressed confidence in the choices by Prime Minister Abdullah Hamdok. She says forming the cabinet is a very progressive step towards democracy, even if it was affected by political shares and interventions. But Hamdok is an expert and economist, and the cabinet names he chose are qualified and experts. Youssef hopes to see the international and regional support for the new cabinet and the lifting of imposed sanctions by the U.S., as long as the cabinet is a civilian government. The cabinet has 4 women among the 18 ministers in the positions of foreign affairs, higher education, youth and sports, and social welfare. Protesters like Sausan Misbah see this as a good sign. Misbah says as a woman who participated in the uprising, she thinks women representation in the new government is very good, as they were part of the change in Sudan. Misbah thinks that women will be part of the upcoming change and it will be a fundamental one. Like every step of Sudan's 2019 revolution, formation of the cabinet was preceded by weeks of negotiations and delays. The next step is creation of a legislative body with 300 members due to be set up within the next 3 months. Meanwhile, the trial of former President Bashir on corruption charges has been postponed to next week as his defense seeks to have his past confessions thrown out of court. Naba Muhiddin for VOA News, Khartoum.
From Khartoum, we move to South Africa, where there has been more xenophobic violence in South Africa's biggest city, Johannesburg, this weekend, with ethnic Zulu hostel dwellers demanding that foreigners leave the country. The protesters, armed with a variety of weapons, beat people up, looted stores, and smashed vehicles. The police confirmed that one person had been killed, but did not say what nationality the victim was. Attacks mostly launched against foreigners and foreign-owned businesses started in South Africa last week, and the death toll is now 11, with scores injured and many arrested. Darren Taylor reports from Johannesburg.
Zulu elder Prince Mangosuthu Buthelezi speaks to a large crowd in a park in central Johannesburg. His audience is mostly Zulu men who live in hostels in and around the city. The police say some of them have led in the xenophobic violence. Buthelezi appeals to them to stop attacking foreigners, but the men jeer him. The men scream that foreigners are stealing their jobs. Buthelezi continues, saying he understands the tensions, complaints and anger, but that those who assault their fellow Africans are turning South Africa into a pariah state. Members of the crowd, some who appear to be drunk, are carrying knives, wooden clubs and other weapons. They sing, "Foreigners, go back home. Go back to where you come from." Groups then leave the park to march through the city. One leader describes it as a protest against Nigerian drug sellers who are turning our girls into prostitutes. But it soon turns into another spree of looting and smashing store windows and vehicles, with the police shooting rubber bullets at the perpetrators. A band of men storms a building they say has been stolen by foreigners. Residents in the floors above pelt the attackers with bricks and other objects. The police fire stun grenades to try to quell the chaos. On national television Monday, Minister of International Relations Naledi Pandor appealed to South Africans to remember who they are.
A people who should love peace, who respect humanity, and who believe in the rights of all. We need to call on all our people to really end this violence. But we do assert that there is a strong element of criminality here. The levels of destruction, the theft that constantly accompanies these incidents suggests that there's a planned set of criminal actions.
Pandor says the South African police will pursue people who exploit ill feeling against foreigners for criminal purposes. Equally, she adds, law enforcement agencies will probe claims that foreign migrants are involved in crimes such as drug dealing. The minister acknowledges that perhaps her government hasn't done enough to improve relations between South Africans and foreigners.
I'm meeting all ambassadors whose countries are represented here. And I would like to propose to them that together we initiate a form of outreach to communities, both South African as well as non-South Africans, and begin to become bridge builders.
But at this stage, the voices of those intent on burning the bridges remain the loudest, with Zulu agitators demanding that government announce a plan to deal with illegal immigrants. I'm Darren Taylor for VOA News in Johannesburg.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, young South Sudanese use social media platforms to address problems in their communities. That story is coming up right after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
are African countries doing enough to preserve wildlife? And do you have any suggestions?
Wildlife in Africa is on the downside. So encouragement to the government is that they should penalize anybody who goes into the forest to lose or make an animal's extinct.
Automatically, no, I can't say yes. Because you can take a scenario in Tanzania when they shot a certain lion over nothing.
Wildlife conservation is very, very poor. Some of these farmers, they are very, very poor. There is no way at least they can earn their living, having their survival from this wild animal. So it is very, very difficult, even though government is saying that let us have wildlife conservation, but it is not easy.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202 630 8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202 630 8011.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. An estimated 100,000 people attended Mass in Mauritius today as Pope Francis wrapped up a three-country visit to Africa with warnings about the struggles of young and economic models that sacrifice people and environment on the altar of speculation and profit. It was the first papal visit in 30 years to the island that is among the continent's most stable and prosperous countries. It gained independence in 1968. The Pope said the young are suffering the most from the country's economic growth, including unemployment, uncertainty about the future, and a growing drug problem that he called a new slavery. Francis earlier visited Mozambique and Madagascar. Some young South Sudanese have started using the social media to tackle challenges facing young men and women in South Sudan. Elizabeth Achu is one of the founders of a group known as Sawasawa Network, which has started using YouTube channel aimed at giving South Sudanese an opportunity to discuss various issues dividing people in South Sudan. Achu says her group is determined to use the media for changing attitudes of South Sudanese.
We mainly focus on tackling social and cultural issues because of...
Such as, can you give example of these issues?
Such as tribalism. You know, since the political conflict erupted in 2013 back in Juba, the social fabric that used to hold us together as South Sudanese was severely damaged. And it continued to be shattered since then. On the other hand, when you look at cultural venues such as sports, poetry, music that used to hold us together, they were also severely undermined by politics, I would say. So all that contributed into increasing hate speech and incite violent conflicts in our community. And we realized when we sat down together with my colleagues that there is a need for us to address these critical threats, but from a different angle that is opposing to its political aspect.
TV is a very expensive medium of communication. It involves a lot of workforce, production, studio, hiring talents. How are you going to do this? Looks like you've put a lot of food in your mouth.
Yes, you are right. TV is expensive to be maintained. However, we are very unique because, first of all, we're not a traditional TV program. We are, like I mentioned, we are taking advantage of the technological skills and social media platforms that we have and most used in the world of today, access to convey our messages. This is one. Number two is that having shows that doesn't necessarily need to be cast intensive or studio based, like just walking around South Sudan with my iPhone and recording, because we are already a registered venture, of course. Getting used together for like a sport event or musical event and having their ideas on what they hope to achieve and what are their challenges that they encounter, to just to promote and also to help in reconciling, you know, because there has been a lot of grievances, if I would say, and people are holding into so much in their hearts that in a way we need to help them pour it out.
I don't want to get into politics, but politics is part of life. The environment in South Sudan is quite tough for the media. How are you going to ensure that you will sail through without difficulties?
This is a very critical question for us, because although we say sometimes that we are not politically involved or we don't focus on political issues, however, everything in South Sudan, almost everything is...
Everything is politics.
Exactly. We are looking into how to tackle political issues and challenges that we face as South Sudanese, but from a social and cultural aspect, like I said, because they're all interrelated. And if we can tackle and heal some of the cultural and social issues that were caused by political destruction, maybe this will also lead to a political healing.
That's Elizabeth Achu, one of the founders of a group known as Sawa Sawa Network. She spoke to me in our studios here in Washington on Friday. A group of South Sudanese enrolled in a one-week workshop on peace building in Kigali, Rwanda, say they have learned that violence ruins peaceful coexistence and deprives the country of development. The head of a local group called South Sudan Youth for Peace and Development says conditions still exist that could lead to more fighting in the country. Mungume Davis Rokarinj has more for VOA from Kigali, Rwanda.
The South Sudanese youth say the training funded by the United Kingdom's Department of International Development has taught them how to engage in peace building and reconciliation. 21-year-old South Sudanese Alice Ciel says she was impressed when she visited the so-called peace villages in Rwanda, where perpetrators of the 1994 genocide live side by side with the victims. She says she had testimonies from victims and perpetrators of the Rwandan genocide who say they treat each other with respect.
I've learned the fact that being human before being a Dinka, being a Nuer, being a Bare, being whatever tribe that is in South Sudan, that is the fact that we had been humans. So if we treat each other as humans, then with time our differences in ideologies, our differences in color, our differences in everything will come to be settled.
She says she will tell her family members and friends back in South Sudan to treat South Sudanese from other tribes with dignity and respect. Another youth, Soro Wilson Sebit, says he learned from the Rwandans that South Sudanese have an identity separate from their individual tribes.
There is one thing that is bigger, and that is the country. When we move out from our identity and start thinking of the country, then we get somewhere to where Rwanda is.
The 1994 Rwanda genocide against Tutsis left at least 800,000 Tutsis and more than Hutus dead. Since then, Rwandans have undergone a gradual healing process that has allowed the victims and perpetrators to reconcile and unite as Rwandan nationals. Augustino Koldeng, the executive director of the South Sudan Youth for Peace and Development Organization, which helped coordinate the workshop, says violence starts in communities with ethnic discrimination and stereotypes.
There are some communities from other sides, call other communities, that they are nyam nyam. Meaning these are people who only just look for what? For something to eat. They need to survive. So these are some, and then you get, there are those phrases like alhalna, this kind of things that we use. We have the stereotype and say, these are not people, without even first knowing who were these people. And this is exactly how the genocide process in Rwanda began.
Deng is urging all South Sudanese youth to work towards preventing violence wherever they live.
Rwanda. Since the 50s, they had experienced this genocide coming in bits. Do we have this conflict in South Sudan coming in bits since 1956? Do we have them? We have had incidents where people are being killed. You get, maybe somebody said, after this, I will also go and revenge. So these are some things that don't stop, it continues. So it's important for us to learn this experience, take the good ones, leave the bad ones.
Deng says his group will send youth to various states to teach other young people to refrain from activities that lead to violence. For VOA News, I am Mugume, Davis Rwakarinj in Kigali, Rwanda.
UN Human Rights Chief Michelle Bachelet has issued a stern warning that climate change poses a rapidly growing global threat to human rights as dwindling resources due to global warming lead to increased hunger, migration and conflict. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva, where she spoke at the opening of the 42nd session of the UN Human Rights Council.
In the prelude to the High Commissioner's speech, a UN representative of the Bahamas warned natural disasters of historic proportions, such as Hurricane Dorian, are becoming the new norm. In agreeing with this assessment, Michelle Bachelet says climate change is a reality affecting every region of the world. She says the climate emergency is driving a sharp increase in global hunger. Citing the World Health Organization, she says climate change is expected to cause an estimated 250,000 additional deaths every year between 2030 and 2050 from malnutrition, malaria, and other ailments.
The world has never seen a threat to human rights of this scope. This is not a situation where any country, any institution, any policymaker can stand on the sidelines. The economies of all nations, the institutional, political, social, and cultural fabric of every state and the right of all your people and future generations will be impacted.
Bachelet warns of escalating conflicts due to climate change, noting that 40% of civil wars over the past six decades have been linked to environmental degradation. She expresses particular concern about the countries of the Sahel, which is among the regions most vulnerable to climate change.
The degradation of arable land across the Sahel region is intensifying competition for already scarce resources, leading to frequent clashes between herders and agriculturalists, which in turn exacerbate ethnic tensions. Slow development and increasing poverty are exposing youth to exploitation by extremist and terrorist groups, fueling violence.
Bachelet presents a generally pessimistic view of the current state of human rights throughout the world. She notes fundamental freedoms and protections of the weakest and most vulnerable are being eroded in all regions. She says not even strong democracies, such as the United States, are immune from this. The UN Rights Chief says she is deeply disturbed that the United States, a nation built on welcoming migrants, is implementing policies that sharply reduce protections for migrant families. She expresses particular concern about Washington's officially rescinded policy of separating migrant children from their parents, which she says still goes on. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
That's our show for this Monday. We now leave you with the song 16th of May by a group calling itself Jay Shamar. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Taking me back to 1983. Yeah. 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 Stand up. Yeah. It was 1983. Way back when we formed our army. Where we stayed enough, where we stayed fight, where we had it rough, where we stayed unite to stand for our people, where you had to be a rebel, Anyanyawan, the first soldiers who fought without guns, a civil war that broke out, we had to flee, war that left our hearts so empty, how many were killed, our troops in the bush, blood spilled on the battlefield, that's why we tried to execute the peace deal in Ethiopia. Reality hit the mind like an overdose of opium, disagreements, misunderstandings.
understandings took us back to the first goal. This time ammunition made for handling. It's sad cause that's the only understanding. The second piece still in 205. Rest in peace, get around, your cause is still alive. Still alive.
We all pray for a better day, fighting every day, blood spilling all the way. It all started on the 16th of May.